Welcome to episode number 54 of the Ignite Physio podcast. This podcast inspires physiotherapists and other health professionals to continue learning and growing in their practice and throughout their career. We explore professional issues with a fresh lens and look inward, delving into topics that help to expand our capacity for growth. I'm Andrew.
And I'm Maxie.
We got a bit of a different format for this episode. We had a great chat yesterday.
A virtual coffee.
That was sort of a quasi webinar. had slides.
It was called a webinar. It was advertised as a webinar, and it was a webinar.
Yeah, exactly. But it was really, you know, a podcast recording as a webinar, and it was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was for the College of Physical Therapists in BC, and had some great questions that came out of that, and it was all about therapeutic relationship within this telehealth rehab world that we are currently in.
Therapeutic relationship, and I would say we talked about just also the personal experience of, and that's important in terms of developing relationship, like how safe does the therapist feel? How revved up and anxious are you when you go into an interaction, and that this virtual world and shifting so quickly into this creates anxiety that can be challenging, you know, when you're trying to develop relationships with people or have positive clinical interactions with people.
So we're actually just going to, we had permission to share the recording, and so we'll hit play and get you to our conversation around telehealth and therapeutic relationship.
Woohoo!
Welcome everybody to our virtual coffee. This is going to be a little bit of a different style of webinar in that Maxie and I are going to be having a bit more of a conversation around the importance and role of therapeutic relationship and how we have to look at that within this telehealth world that we're currently living in. We'll be covering a number of different topics related to therapeutic relationship and covering both the clinical and research elements of that. But it's going to be, you know, a little bit more informal conversation, and we'll definitely have an opportunity for questions at the end. We'll dive in. So we have a first poll question. And really the question is, where are you with telerehab? We're actually interested to know what your emotional state is with that. Not necessarily, you know, technical state, but where are you, you know, from an emotional standpoint? Excited, confused, frustrated, freaked out, confident. Responses are coming in fast and furious. This is good. So what we're seeing is excited is the highest one right now, with about 50%, confused at 27%, frustrated 33%, freaked out 23%, and confident 8%. So the confident ones are definitely in the minority right now. Great that you're in that place, but you know, obviously for many of you, it, you know, combination of excited, confused, frustrated, and freaked out. So
okay, now before we go on, because this is what we do normally, right? Is go off on tangents.
Yes.
So like, okay, so now when you take that poll, do you feel all of those things, or did you feel all of those things? Did you go through that whole, all of those emotions, Andrew, or you know what I mean? Like, how did you feel?
I think part of it is that I think there's this whole layer of the pandemic that sort of throws the emotional state that I would have with doing telerehab, you know, maybe a little bit out of whack, but maybe that's just also part of our life experience right now. So I would say that I was probably initially, what would I say? Maybe a little bit freaked out. I sort of went through that a little bit. And I had the overlay of that I was also changing practice areas right when this happened. So that was, you know, it's just sort of like the perfect storm. So, and I would say definitely there's parts of like excited, especially when you start to get some clinical outcomes that you're like, wow, I actually can make a difference in someone's life. And they got value out of this and they expressed that value. You know, I think that excited, but I think then I also get frustrated where I'm like, man, this was tough trying to get them to demonstrate something when, you know, the audio crapped out on me and I had to now do a dial in and I, you know, the picture was blurry. Like, so I think that to me, I think it's not uncommon to like to move through these emotional states within a telehealth session, within the day of doing telehealth sessions, within a week, right? So I would say that let's do all of the above. How about that?
Well, and so you have that emotional overlay of COVID and the urgency of doing this, right? Yes. So there's COVID in period, right? Mm. And you're changing work environments. We all have heard about the stresses around family and all of those things going on in the background and the noise. Yeah. But also then there's a sense of urgency. We got to do this. We got to do this quickly. We got to, you know, and so you start to get a little bit revved up. And then there's just the uncertainty of how this is going to all unfold.
Yeah.
Right. In a session where you're not, you may not be used to shifting your perspective, or all of a sudden you can't use these. Mm-hmm. And how does that translate? And so there's that uncertainty there. But, you know, the excitement of it, and I think we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but the excitement of it having, being an actual opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I'm going to be quiet now and we can move on. So yeah, we don't hijack the whole set.
Yeah. You know what? This is what we do. So we should not be too concerned about that. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the literature on telehealth, because I think that people are probably wondering, does this even work? Can we even do this? I think, let's be honest, there's not a lot of research. You know, Max, I know that you were looking through some of that. We were sharing some articles. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, my take is that we're in sort of the infancy of really of understanding this platform and service delivery and the effectiveness and satisfaction with service delivery through this platform. All right. So I don't know, like, is telehealth the intervention, right? Or are we intervening through telehealth? That's a philosophical discussion.
Yes.
I think that tentatively what we have a sense of is that patients appear to be satisfied, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're not necessarily going to lose patient satisfaction through this platform,
yeah,
right? This way of doing, and that you can actually get outcomes, positive outcomes. I think right now it still depends on maybe the population, what you're doing, all of those things. But in real life, in the real world, we're all dealing with those sorts of things as well, even with the interventions that we provide so in person. So yeah, that's the sense I'm getting from that literature. So it's heartening for me to hear that, to go, okay, so this isn't going to be like, it's going to be a failure. So
yeah, exactly. And I think that part of it too is that it's easy to feel like, well, I can't give 100% of what I usually feel like I can give, right? Maybe that's, you know, diagnostic accuracy, maybe that's some of the hands-on treatments, whatever. And so then you sort of, it's like this all or nothing thinking of like, well, if it's not effective the way I usually do it, then it must not be effective, right? And I think that there's like this scale of level of effectiveness. And truthfully, you know, what I'm hearing is that patients actually are liking it better, right? When I talk to therapists and, you know, others in the profession, they're like, patients are like, look, you're giving me undivided attention. Like, there is no interruptions. And so, I mean, we'll dive into this a little bit later, but I think that, you know, it doesn't have to, like, we have this perception that this necessarily is inferior or it's not adequate, right? And we just did a snippet of a systematic review and meta-analysis that showed that the outcomes that were produced via video conferencing was similar to face-to-face intervention, right? And so, even though the research is limited, I think that we can maybe let go a little bit of this idea that it's always going to be inferior in some way, right? Like, oh, well, we're just making do.
Yeah. And just from a research perspective, not in particular to telehealth, but when we're talking about therapeutic relationship, research specific to therapeutic relationship, the work done in psychology, psychotherapy, like when we assess the quality of the therapeutic relationship and therapists assess it, and patients assess it, there's often quite a difference in the perceptions of therapists on the therapeutic relationship and patients. And usually the patient's perception has better correlation to outcomes. All right. So I think there's this idea of expectancy, what we perceive we need to be doing. This could totally be an opportunity to be able to even more so get on the same page with our patients.
Yeah.
Even if we believe we were on the same page before, this might create an opportunity to even, you know, expand that capacity, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think, our perceptions don't necessarily equal the patient's perceptions. And let's maybe hold our perceptions and beliefs about telehealth maybe a little more loosely, with more of an open hand, and just sort of run some experiments, right, with your patients and see, how did that go? Ask your patients how that went, right? And I think we'll be surprised to see like, well, actually that was, we can maybe shift our perspective in a way that sort of knocks off some of our pre-existing beliefs.
Well, and shifting perspective is also going to influence how you approach, right? How you approach what you're doing. Shifting your perspective is going to approach how you be in relationship, how you are in relationship, and what you do in relationship, and what you do within a session. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you're talking about, you know, ask your patient, you know, that the idea of even thinking about consciously doing that more mm-hmm. within a session, opening up a space for the patient to come in and give you more feedback about mm-hmm. how things are going. So like even prepping people to be on telehealth, right? Like this is going to be new for them too, for your patients as well, right? Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting experience. And so even prepping them, going, we're going to be working a little bit differently, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to maybe be asking you more questions than I'd asked you before. I'm going to be asking more for your feedback or how you're feeling physically or, you know, or those sorts of things. So this will give us an opportunity to actually talk a little bit more about what's happening and get more feedback. Right? Well, that's something, I think.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting too, is I've often had conversations with patients because I've been exploring this whole idea, like when we were in person, is the stress that a patient is in or under when they're getting an assessment. You know, they're meeting you for the first time, you're putting your hands on them, this is a new environment. And then we forget sometimes that for patients, that actually can be a little bit stressful. And they may not be able to remember some of the things we say, there are a whole bunch of new information, all the takeaways, all this. And it's possible that they may actually be under less stress doing this in a telehealth session, because guess what? They're at home. You're not touching them. You know, they're not in a new environment, right? Like, so the thing is, we always think, oh, no, but the clinic environment is better because it's like less stressful. Well, it's less stressful for us because we're comfortable with it, right? But it's very possible that the patient may actually feel more comfortable in their home environment.
This study, this qualitative study, sounds a bit crazy, but it was almost more personal. This qualitative study done on Australia actually spoke to that. Patients felt, and you know, and therapists picked up on the fact, this power dynamic where we are in control in our environment and we control how things move and operate. From the moment somebody calls into the clinic, right? And the moment they step into the clinic, they don't have as much control over what's going to happen to them, right?
No.
But in their home environment, the patients in this study said, yeah, I felt comfortable. And therapists were able to look at them in their environment.
Yeah.
Right. And be able to see, oh, well, we could modify that or we could do these sorts of things. Right. So expanding our perspective, we're always wondering about function.
Yeah.
Right. And how to help people functionally. Yeah. And we have these artificial environments within our clinics, right, that we work with. But now we're actually in their home, uh-huh. right? So you can be innovative in saying, hey, can you take your screen over to your stairs,
yes.
right? And show me like how this is set up, right? Or how we can do this. So I think it provides a lot of opportunity to work within the physical, their physical space and physical environment more thoroughly, more in depth, more accurately uh-huh. maybe.
Yeah, and it may be an opportunity for our patients to actually absorb more and retain more. And again, these are such important elements to patient transformation and healing, right? So I guess the thing is that the in-person we think as being like at the epitome or the top of the, you know, the food chain of treatment environments, but it may not be for our patients, right? And for some situations, that definitely is going to be, you know, a lot different.
You bring up safety, and we're going to be talking about safety. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In a bit, right? But that's totally when you're talking about being stressed out, being more anxious. We may be the ones who don't feel safe. Yeah. The patient, right? We're not feeling safe. We're not feeling comfortable in this environment right now, right? And that's can be expected. All right. Yes. I just told you I was a bit anxious doing this thing here today.
We're used to just talking to each other, right? So
I'm in between spaces, right? So I think that it's important to recognize and acknowledge the fact that, as you said, safety is important, and we'll talk about it later, so I won't mm-hmm. talk about it, but you know, we'll go a little bit into that retention piece and mm-hmm. and the importance mm-hmm. of that.
Well, we've got another poll. We're liking polls today. So we're curious to know what stage are you at?
Yeah.
Are you in that platform selection stage, the treatment adaptation stage, or that value offering stage?
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Looks like most people are doers right now. They're in it.
Yeah. So probably if we would have asked that question 2 weeks ago, we'd probably be, you know, a very different response rate, right? And so, so we have 16% that are in platform selection, 60% in treatment adaptation, and then 25% in value offering. I just have a slide here that looks at, you know, three key areas. And I've been having a number of conversations with therapists over the last few weeks, just asking like, where do you need help? Like, where are you at? And what I noticed was that, you know, we will start off in terms of like trying to solve this platform question. Like, how do I actually create a virtual clinical environment so that I can actually connect with patients, right? And then there is this whole thing of like, well, but now I don't know how to do, you know, my neuro exam, or how do I do a lower body exam in a virtual environment when I'm not used to this, right? So there's this whole adaptation piece of like, from an assessment standpoint, from a treatment standpoint. And then I think that this next, whether it's a stage or just sort of progression, is you start to think about, well, what else do I offer, right? And for some of us, we're comfortable and are used to doing like providing physio without a lot of hands-on treatment, right? There's a lot of education, movement-based, you know, strategies. For some of us, it might be that we're used to doing a lot of modalities, whether that's manual therapy, needling, all these different things. And so we're saying, well, who am I when it comes to my interaction with my patient? What am I offering? And so I think then we start to explore, well, what else can I bring to the table here for my patient? You know, because guess what? I can go through my exercises with them, but that may not take a whole session. So what else am I talking about? What else am I going to be, you know, doing? Who am I being with that patient experience? So I feel like most of you right now are in this treatment adaptation, and it's absolutely, and I think, let's be honest, it can be exhausting, right? It can be tiring because you're thinking on the fly, trying to figure out, okay, well, I've got someone, you know, that I need to reassess, or I've got to evaluate in some way. How do I do this when I'm in a 2D world right now, when I'm, you know, no longer have my hands to be able to, you know, pull in from a, you know, an input standpoint, and now I'm trying to get input from my screen when I'm trying to look at patients. So I would say that you're going to find yourself sort of moving in and out of these areas too, right? Because you may find that, oh, okay, well, now I'm doing something different, and now how does the platform relate to that? Or, you know, I've got this patient, and I, you know, what's that value offering for them that I'm going to provide? So I think the thing is that it's okay where you're at. Like, it's not like one place is good and then not. And just recognize that it's a process. And I think part of it is just like, how do we support each other through this? Because a lot of this is uncharted territory. I mean, I am not an expert in telehealth, and I think there's very few experts in telehealth because it's just so new and we're all in the same boat, right? So, you know, I think if we can figure out how to make that work, but it's helpful to sort of know where you are generally. And these are just, you know, some observations that I've been making from our conversation. So,
okay. So when I'm truly interested in this, I'm interested in your experience. Like, when you were selecting your platform, what were some of the things that you had to consider? Or, I mean, I suppose there's some obvious things that you would consider, like which platform are we using? Skype, Zoom, are we using, you know what I mean? But then when you're actually into the platform, things you didn't expect, right? That you needed to, that now you're going, oh, okay, I could give somebody this advice or tell them, make sure you check this out, right?
I mean, obviously there's a whole, I mean, and I think College did a talk, a webinar on, you know, where they brought in some folks to talk about that. So, you know, I don't want to sort of rehash that, but I think to me, it's part of it is like, what's actually going to deliver the best experience for the patient, right? Like, you know, I've been playing around with a few different platforms, and some of them, I just literally, you know, I find that the screen doesn't work, the audio doesn't work. Like, and it's like, now all of a sudden it's like, you've created this barrier from a collaboration standpoint with the patient. And so it's like how durable or how stable is that platform, I think is a huge piece, because to me, you're trying to create this trust with your patient, and the technology can erode that trust, right? Even though it may be completely out of your, you know, your hands, I think that that's a tough one. To me, I think it's just like having a platform that works well is a big piece from what I've been looking at. And then the treatment adaptation has been a challenging one too. And I think it's tiring. I think that's the big thing. And just even from talking to therapists, is that it's okay if you feel tired at the end of doing a few telehealth sessions, because it's you're having to think about these things in totally different contexts. So,
yeah, you're having to do work differently. You're working differently. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more for you're managing more, mentally. Also, we were talking before coming on, and I was saying how on the Twitter, I was starting to read this article. It was behind a paywall, so I only got the first like five lines or first paragraph of the article. Yeah. But the assumption is that this will be less, we'll be less tired, and that actually we aren't picking up nonverbal cues as much. But in reality, this, like I said, behind a paywall.
Well, I was reading a similar article on that too, yeah.
But it was very interesting. The point that they were making, in turn, and I believe they had research behind it, literature behind it, was that we're actually being overwhelmed with nonverbal cues when we're in video conferencing like this, because my assumption is that because we're looking at one another all the time, and if there's no external break, right? You're seeing somebody. So you may not pick up sometimes on the nuance of a nonverbal, but at the same time, you're getting a lot of nonverbals. Like people now, like if I'm, you know, moving my hands around, that's a lot of nonverbal.
Oh, yeah. And you find yourself talking louder. You find yourself like, you know, straining. I was doing an assessment yesterday where I was literally like trying to look like this into the screen because I was like, just, and I was like, oh, hang on a second. Me moving my head doesn't actually change the angle on the patient. But of course, it's like one of those things. Now you've got to communicate with the patient. Can you adjust your screen? Because I can't see the lower, like your foot. And I need to do that because you're having pain in your foot, right? So it's like even that kind of thing where you're exaggerating your body language. You're exaggerating you're enunciating more clearly, like you have to, because you want to make sure you're not having any kind of miscommunication through, you know, the video platform that you're using, right? So,
but that's awesome though. Like I imagine, like even you trying to do that, right? If I were, that would have freaked me out a little bit because you were getting into my space.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, and contrary to popular belief, we do actually control proximity within video conferencing, right? And that has an influence on non-verbally, physiologically on people. So that's important. But you even trying to do that, that would have been awesome.
Well, I don't think she was looking at me, thankfully. Like she was actually trying to do what I was asking to her. but I just caught myself as like, whoa, that's a lot of face on my screen there. I better back off a bit.
Hey, Andrew here. Just a quick break from the podcast as I wanted to let you know about an innovative web-based tool that I'm building that's going to help optimize your treatment approach and achieve better results with less stress. The reason I'm building this app is to help myself and other therapists more deeply understand our patients so that we can avoid the potential pitfalls that can jeopardize treatment outcomes. So much of what impacts treatment is hidden below the surface, and this tool will help adjust how you approach each patient based on who they are. Think of it as Outcome Measures 2.0. Make sure to check out the show notes for a link to sign up to get my latest updates. All right, back to the show.
That's a lot of face.
Well, and I, you know what I've been realizing is that I just feel like when you talk about the emotions of like telehealth, right? Initially, I was like dreading it. I was like, oh, what is this going to be? You know, can I even do this? Whatever. But then it was like the shift of like, you know what? I think this is an opportunity. I think this is an opportunity for us to take, you know, how we look at doing a biopsychosocial approach. We talk about it, it's a buzzword, we, you know, whatever. But this is an opportunity to really sort of take that to the next level. And I think it forces us to, right? I think it's so easy. Like if we start having a conversation in clinic with a patient about their pain and we think that they have a persistent pain issue, how easy is it to default to something that we do hands-on from the bio side because the patient is giving us some resistance to have that conversation? And now we're like, well, but let's talk about it. Can we explore this a bit more, right? It's almost like, well, I can't default to my usual or what feels comfortable or what the patient expectation is. Because guess what? The patient has no expectation that you're going to do hands-on with them in a virtual video treatment. Like there's no default mode there, right? It's like we've just erased that. So I think to me, I feel like there's just so much opportunity to say, like, this is an opportunity for us as therapists to really be able to look. When we talk about that value offering, it's not just like, oh, you know, whatever that I'm offering from a service standpoint, but how do I shift how I look at the patient, how I interact with the patient, so that I'm really exploring things that maybe I don't feel comfortable doing because maybe I just haven't done a lot of that in the clinic setting. But I have this opportunity to, right? I have this like one-on-one dedicated time. And guess what? People are open to also talking because there's a lot of social isolation. And so the thing is that they may actually be very receptive to you asking questions about what's going on in some of these areas that maybe they wouldn't have had before.
And the idea that, yes, I think this entire situation is stressful. By situation, I mean the pandemic in and of itself, right? That brings up different anxieties for patients, for people, for ourselves, but for people that we're going to be working with that are having different challenges socially social isolation or different challenges with working in different spaces or their mental state, and how they're feeling. So, or sleep or those sorts of things. And so really, I mean, we've talked about this before in terms of, how many times have we heard, I know my instructors when I was in school told me, and you read it all the time, if you do a great history,
the patient will tell you
what's wrong with them, right? What is going on? And they will guide you to what they need, right? If you only and possibly in person, we didn't feel we had the time to do that, right? We didn't feel we had the time to open up to that possibility, right?
Yeah.
Because there's this perception that we have that may be a false perception that if we open that space up for people to talk about their different social situations or their psychological situation, their mental states, that they're going to fill the space, and then we're not going to be able to shepherd things the way we need to in order to control the interaction so that we have enough time to get to that next person in the next cubicle, right?
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the case. There's some great study in Germany actually highlighted with physicians that when they actually just let the patients talk and didn't interrupt them, the average talking time per patient just for telling their story was 92 seconds.
and
the physicians were given the option to at the 5 minute mark, if a patient was talking for 5 minutes, they could actually stop the patient and they could start to intervene. Most patients didn't get to 5 minutes of straight on talking, and also that the physicians found that the information that the patient was giving them just by opening up to letting them speak, right, versus directing questions at them with a history, like how we typically take a history that might be a little more close-ended in some situations, that the patients were offering information that was really important and they wouldn't have wanted to stop them from talking. So you have to imagine that as a patient, being able to just tell your story without being inundated with questions is, that's just,
Well, and again, like how much better for a patient to be able to share their story where they feel like where that safety is present, right? like that opportunity for you actually to just for them to share is going to be that much better when they actually feel they're in their own home environment where they're safe, right? Like to me, I think it just sort of allows that to happen, that interaction is just facilitated in that experience, right? So, and I think I just think too, like, how many times is it so easy in our assessments or treatments to just gloss over patient goals? Let's tell me, okay, so your goal is to get rid of pain, right? Yeah, okay, good. Like, what was your other goal? Okay, good. And then you didn't move on to, like, okay, now I got to go on to, my assessment or whatever, right? And I'm like, what if we could actually just spend a bit more time with that? Because guess what? We have some time to do that. And just what we can glean, I think it's just one of those things. To me, that's the opportunity too, is the richness of understanding their story may be the transformation for the patient too, right? I think that there's a bit of a decoupling that has to happen in terms of thinking that the transformation that we provide to our patients is solely by us putting our hands on them, right? It's solely by us needling that muscle tissue or whatever, right? And looking at how that transformation for a patient can actually take place. It's bringing force on us, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? I think that's the opportunity.
Well, and the opportunity also that, I think just with my work in therapeutic relationship, most therapists are going to tell you, yes, this is important. This is really important. However, I'm not going to get paid for developing therapeutic relationship, right? I can't bill for therapeutic relationship development, right? Because we're in person and it's about, what we're doing and the outcomes that we're achieving and not so much on the process of what's happening.
Yeah.
Right. But this situation is providing opportunity for that process to come out. So, man, if we could refine our ability to be able to communicate, develop relationship,
listen,
be reflective as a practitioner, listen, reflect back. Man, there'd be a value proposition then moving back to in person to saying, hey, actually doing this stuff was really important. And now I need the time and the space to do this in person.
Yeah.
Right. With
So true.
And so there's that translation back for us to be able to feel confident doing it in person, but also potentially the payers in that, mm-hmm. in that, then how do you communicate that? Hey, you want to know what? We did some really good stuff, and this is why it was so good, because of this process. And yeah. So you value this as well.
Exactly, yeah. Right? I mean, it's the possibility exists for some of these, the systems that we operate in, to actually shift as well. It's not just us that's needing to shift in our treatment approach. It's beyond that.
And yeah, and so there's an opportunity actually to, I think, shift our perspective from the idea of we're doing something to the patient, mm-hmm. to working with the patient, mm-hmm. but then even on a higher level, to how can I be in service and of service,
mm-hmm. yeah,
to patients and to payers, to third party payers. How can I be of service to you or in service, right? Because I think with this pandemic, it's being highlighted that physical therapy is an essential practice or essential healthcare service. Mm-hmm. I mean, being questioned. I think this once again is an opportunity to say, actually, we can be of service. It may be in a different way, mm-hmm. but we need to be nimble. We need to be responsive. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to say, I got into this profession because I wanted to be of service and in service,
yeah.
for people and their health.
Yeah.
And so this is offering us a space to expand. Mm-hmm. How we can be of service, right? And especially in a pandemic, when we're in a crisis, it's like, okay, all hands on deck. What can I do,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
how can I do it, right?
Yeah.
Also, including the fact that it's a little bit scary for us to be able to kind of move through. And there are going to be some frustrating things that we need to work through.
Yeah, exactly. Well. Yeah. So there's opportunity on many, many levels. I mean, let's, you know, opportunity for our patients, opportunity for us as therapists, opportunity within the systems we work. So yeah, so we got another poll. Let's see here. What do we want to talk about on that slide, Maxie? What are
we? So what value have you been offering? Not needling, mm-hmm. not doing any manual. Mm-hmm. What has been your value, do you believe, mm-hmm. to your patients? And or have they told you, given you feedback on value?
What I think is interesting is that a lot, like often patients are like, well, can you even do anything for me? Because again, we may have conditioned our patients in some ways in terms of how we have delivered value, right? So I think it's harder for patients that we maybe have seen and are conditioned to get a particular value from, you know, the sessions we do. And I mean, so for example, if I'm doing IMS with a patient, well, they're like, well, can you actually do anything of value for me? And then they're surprised when I actually can, because the thing is that I think they will just assume that what I can do from like my movement evaluation and observation and deduction from history and physical exam, all that, that's sort of just like this given, right? It's like, oh, well, that's sort of just in the background. That's just sort of course you're supposed to do that. Where I really come is I come for you for the value of whatever, that you can needle my shoulder or whatever it is, right? So it's interesting that they sort of forget all these other things that sort of encompass that. And they sort of focus on the small little part, because really it's just a small part of this tangible value, because that's what they associate what I'm giving to them, right? And so I think that that's been interesting in terms of having that conversation and just even being able to experience that shift for my patients to say, oh, well, actually, this was really helpful. Like, this was really useful. I'm surprised you're able to change my pain by just changing the way I moved, right? Like, so I think that has been interesting, is like, how do I help my patients recognize that? Because until they experience it, it's almost like their default mode is, well, no, you can't provide value, because in my mind, the value you've provided has been because of the hands-on blah, blah, blah that you've been doing.
Okay. So here's the existential kind of piece of it, because I'm going, okay, you know, I think, you know, you previously said, well, you were kind of wondering, am I going to be able to offer value? How did you stumble through that? Like, how did you prepare yourself to be able to even communicate your value? Like if somebody said, well, how did you prepare yourself? Because like, are you picking up what I'm putting down?
Oh,
like,
yeah. And I mean, I would say that I don't know if I did prepare myself very well, I'll be honest. It's not like I was like, let me contemplate on how I did this. But I think that prepping the patient and prepping, like, you know, just giving them cues for their environment, right? I think the thing is that they don't know what to expect. But if I can even just put in like a few minutes of you know, effort thinking, okay, here's what things you will need, because I think I can assume that I'm going to need these things. And I need you to have a space that you can do some things. And I think part of it is, so I think that that actually makes a big difference, because otherwise what happens is that the patient says, well, hang on a second, I'm not ready for this. So guess what? Their stress level goes up. They feel now less safety, right? So I think that that idea of being able to help the patient with prepping their environment, I think makes a big difference. Well, and truthfully, I mean, I think it's like you sort of, you muddle your way through it a little bit, but you know, I'm just being honest, but I think that you realize, wow, there is a lot that we can do. Like, it's almost like we discount ourselves before we even need to discount ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, wait, yes, I do use a lot of observation. And oh, yes, there is a lot that I can glean from a history. And oh, yes, you know, yeah, I couldn't test this. Or, you know, and I've had patients where I say, hey, do you have someone that could help? You know, I want to just be able to, I need you, an assistant, to help with a bit of muscle testing, because I was just like, you know what, this is going to make my life way easier. And guess what? It did make my life a lot easier. So if I can help that, set that up so that that's possible, then that even just makes it less stressful for me. And so then you're not trying to think on the fly as much. And so I've been playing around with, I mean, you've got to be creative. I think it really depends on your patient population too. You know, whether you're dealing with someone who feels really comfortable with technology, someone who doesn't, like all of those things, I think, play into it.
You have to be innovative. You have to figure it out. But also, I think you figured, and part of it, you reflected in practice and reflected on practice afterwards. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
You have to reflect, right? And you have to go, what worked, what didn't work, and be okay with something not working.
Exactly. You know? I think that's a big thing. And I think that, like, the way I like to think about it is you got to shift it from, it's a different environment. I mean, the thing is that telehealth, like, we can't somehow just translate this directly across the board from like in-person to virtual, right? And so I think what I find helpful is if I can sort of take a mindset of like, I'm going to play a little bit, right? This idea of like, I need to play with this because this is going to make it more, it's going to make it more fun. And I mean, if it's fun, then I'm going to be creative. If I'm stressed out, guess what? My frontal cortex is going to shut down, and I'm going to just sort of go to default mode, which problem is default mode doesn't really help me because I'm not in the same environment that I'm going to default to. So I can't do that. So I feel like if I can play, like, I'm just going to play around with this, right? And I think and I don't use that language with my patients, but what I will say is like, you know what, can we try this? Can we, like, I'm not sure if this is going to work, but can we do this? And the thing is that patients are totally open to that, right? So again, I sometimes feel like it's so easy to, like, we have this, like, the two little gremlins on our shoulders are like, no, you didn't do that right. No, you know, like, and it's like, well, no, I, like, we can be creative. And it's sometimes going to be maybe it's not going to be the direct path that we're used to getting in terms of like, oh, well, this is the way I usually assess this, right? Now I'm coming at this at a bit of a different angle. That's okay. But I think the thing is if that gremlin's too loud on our one shoulder, like we're going to just get frustrated with ourselves. We're going to shut down our creativity. And I think that's problematic because ultimately there is no recipe for this, right? Like, that you can't just be like, okay, well, here's how you modify your exam. Because guess what? You've got a patient that's unique to the situation. They've got a home environment that's unique to their situation. And we've got you, right? So the thing is, we've got like variables coming on all sides. So there is no recipe. And, you know, and obviously that would be helpful to some degree. But I think that if the idea of thinking of it is like, okay, how can I make this sort of a play thing? Like, and whether that's even just practicing with someone in your house, you know, or a colleague that you sort of just want to be able to run through that, I think that can be helpful. So there's ways to do that, you know, not always on the fly, but I think that that's something that I've found helpful is, and I just really, I mean, it's really an invitation, right? Like we've talked about this on some of the podcast episodes, is like, we're just inviting the patient. They're going to be receptive. They're going to be open to then trying to, right? If we sort of have this, you know, and that's really, I think that's sort of that part of that therapeutic relationship in terms of collaboration. Like this is a collaborative process. Like, we need to work together, right?
Yeah. And so there's the alliance piece, right? Yeah. So you need to be working towards common goals, agreeing on tasks, and, you know, developing that relationship or that bond in that. And so that collaborative piece, highlighting collaboration, right? Asking more questions of your open-ended questions. Yeah. Tell me about how it feels. What could we adapt? How did that work for you? Is there a place that we could do this in your home? Like, let's be creative together.
Yeah.
Right. In creating solutions. And so a collaborative mindset, even though we do, well, I'm not saying that, you know, in person, we don't, we just, you know, dish out treatments, and that's not the case. Of course, no. We collaborate, right? We're more collaborative, but this opens it up more because we may have to offer more, and we may have to get more input from them and help them become a part of that more.
And language that I've been playing around with is this idea of like asking the patient, can you be my hands for me, right? So like, I want you to feel this, and can you tell me how that feels? Like, and the thing is that patients are like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, what do you want me to do? Right. But the thing is then it like, and is it going to be as good as the way we feel? Maybe, maybe not. Right. But the thing is, does it matter? Like, the thing is, they're giving us super valuable input, and they're part of this process and helping understand their body. Right. Like, by getting them to be our hands, they are engaging in their experience of their body, which to me is just like, that's part of this transformative process that we're engaging with as therapists, right? So that, I think, is that language I feel has been helpful, right? Is and again, it's an invitation. Can you be, right? They could say no. You know, I'd be like, okay, well, let's
well, and like, honestly, like, I became a little verklempt. Like, like, that's very touching, you know. Can you be my hands, right? I'm like, oh, that's very touching, you know. And so it's yeah, there are so many layers to that, mm-hmm. that idea of how the patient then becomes engaged in developing their awareness to their body. The body becomes that pivot point for connection.
Exactly.
Again, so we're good at developing relationship by connecting through the body,
yes.
Helping people become aware of their bodies, helping people move, right? But at the same time, when we're in this situation, we may feel like, oh, the body isn't a pivot point anymore.
Yeah.
I've got to do all of these other things.
Yeah.
And actually, no, you can come back to the body. You come back to asking people about their physical experience. You can come back to asking them to be your hands, or maybe even your eyes, depending on the scenario, right? Like, you know, tell me what's happening. Tell me what you're feeling. And that helps them become more aware of their bodies. That's a huge, huge part of developing therapeutic relationship, developing connections with patients.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I mean, it's true because like we, in-person sessions, we use the body and our palpation, all that to create that connection. We're getting, that's an information source for us in terms of what's actually going on. But we do have these other channels for communication, obviously the verbal, nonverbal, but letting the patient be a channel for that communication too. So that's been interesting. And something that I feel too is like, you know, just talking to, you know, about like how we have to adapt and be creative. Like I had a patient yesterday who I was needing to do some cane instruction. I wasn't at a clinic to be able to grab a cane to show her. So I had to use my kid's hockey stick to demonstrate how to size a cane. Right. Like, but it was like, it's even allowing, I think, that space, you know, in those interactions, say, hey, do you need to go get something? Like, it's okay if you're not in front of the screen as we're doing, like, if you need to take a minute out to go grab a cane that you have or grab whatever tool for us to go through an exercise or whatever. Like, I think sometimes we feel like we have to be face-to-face, like 100% of the session, right? And it's like, well, no, but what if, let's be okay with they needing to go get something or they need to go do something, you know, to see how that feels. Like, we don't always need to feel like we have to have the camera on them 100% of the time as we're doing it. And I think what that does is it even just takes a bit of that pressure off and it takes a bit of the stress off for the patient. It just helps to maybe a little normalize a little more the interaction like it would be in a more in-person session.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Kathy in the background, just watching the time. There are a few more slides to go through. All of this is totally fascinating and enjoying the whole conversation. I wanted to cue you that there are a couple questions that you probably would get to in your later slides if we got down there. Mm-hmm. One is around how do you prepare for that initial session so that you're feeling at ease and confident and you can help the patient through that process? And then there are several things around how do you get good leading questions to allow patients to tell their story effectively? That's going back to what Maxie was talking about earlier about that 92 seconds that it takes for them to tell the story. So how do you get that out of a patient?
Well, I think we kind of talked a little bit about this already, but how do you go about prepping yourself before an interaction, before a session in this world, this virtual world? Mm-hmm. And then how do you prep the patient when you enter the interaction?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I feel still anxiety when I do my sessions because I just feel like there's a bit of this pressure. And so I think to me, like one of the things I'm trying to work on incorporating, and it's something that we've talked about in podcasts, but like grounding myself, you know, and I think what's hard is because like in a clinic environment, I will ground myself before I enter that treatment room, right? Like I will pause. I just take a deep breath. Okay. And then I will sit with them so that that communicates that receptivity and that opportunity for safety, all this stuff. It's different because I'm doing the session at home. Like it's, so the thing is that like my environmental cues are not saying this is my treatment space, right? Like I try to prep it as best as I can for that. So I think that the more that you can have sort of that dedicated space for treatment, sort of prepping yourself, making it feel like, okay, I have the things at hand that I need or likely will need. Like, okay, I have a TheraBand here. I have this, I have that. I think part of it is also like, how am I in front of my screen? Like, am I showing half the ceiling? Do I have a window behind me and the person can't see my face, right? So I think that that prepping, recognizing that we're in a 2D world here, how do I improve that communication channel as much as possible? So I reduce the potential for noise really with that, I think is, and that noise can be visual, it can be auditory, whatever it is, right? I think that's really important. Like really, I think that what we can do is it's a process, right? But like, just like we would do in a regular in-person session today, what I'd like to do is I'd like to go through this, this, and this. Does that sound okay to you? Right. I think, you know, I think it's very similar to telehealth. Like, okay, like we want to go through, like, is someone at home with you? You know, like who is there an emergency? Like, I just want to talk about a couple of those things to clear that up. Okay. Today, what I'd like to do is go through this, right? Do you have a couple of things on hand? You know, if you can prep them before that, even the session, that's even better. Because I think you have to be honest, like patients don't really know what to expect. You know, like it's one thing when you've had a few sessions with them telehealth, they're like, okay, yeah, cool, whatever. But if it's like a first session, you're dealing with someone that maybe an older adult that's maybe not as comfortable, I think they don't really know what you're going to do. So I think the more that we can explain, here is what the session is going to look like. You know, it may feel a little different because I'm not going to be doing some hands-on things, but there's a lot that I can provide within the session. But first I want to ask a few questions, whatever, you know, like just sort of that kind of thing, I think can really put someone at ease and just say, okay, this is good. This is pretty normal. Right. And I think that that's why that collaboration is so important. Cause once they get a little bit of that feel of like, oh, this isn't that big of a deal, they'll also be more relaxed in the session as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so even inviting a story, mm-hmm. right. For example, I've used the paint me a picture of what your life looks like right now.
Yeah.
Right. In the scenario, paint me a picture about it. So it's almost like getting out of the idea that you're going to tell me about what you can and can't do. And the idea of if you can have a high level, develop some high level questions. So paint a picture. Tell me the story of how you got here. What does your day look like? Mm-hmm. Or what does, how have you been impacted by mm-hmm. by what's happening to you, mm-hmm. right? So the typical standard open-ended questions,
yeah.
And then you can probe more, right? Oh, because you're going to want to be listening. So this is an opportunity for us to really listen. If we're listening to stories, we want to be able to contact poignant statements or things that people are saying. So for example, wow, that sounds really important.
Yeah.
Right. Could you describe that a little bit more for me? Right. Or you might be noticing on looking for nonverbal behaviors, because this is important. They're talking about something, about a car accident, and their voice starts to rise and they start to come up and going, wow, when you start talking about the accident, your whole posture changes. Do you notice that? Even saying that opens up an opportunity for them to talk. Can you tell me more about how that feels when you talk about it? I almost guarantee you they'll go, oh, I didn't even notice I was doing that. Oh yeah. Right. So then that opens up another avenue, right? So it's really about not necessarily always having the perfect thing to say. We have some of those bread and butter things that you open with, but being responsive and actually tracking for verbal and nonverbal behaviors and making contact with them by just an acknowledgement, even an emotion that sounds frustrating. Oh yes. Well, that opens up a whole other story.
Exactly. Right. And I think we, when they're sharing, we can, I mean, that's really that whole reflective listening piece is like, I have a hypothesis. This sounds like this is frustrating for you or whatever. Right. Like letting, like sort of some of those lead in statements and phrases that give an opportunity for the patient to confirm your hypothesis or to say, no, actually, it's not frustrating. It's actually just feel like I'm just sad about it, right? Like, but now you've given the patient an opportunity to clarify and you've made contact again, right?
Absolutely. And so that opens up like that, the idea of even your attitude, okay, going in needs to be of curiosity, right? I want to learn about this human being, right? That's what I want to learn about. I don't necessarily want to learn about the knee. That will come, but tell me about you.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I was going to mention too is I have started a Facebook group for clinicians, and we do actually have a free guide that we're giving for like questions that you can ask your patients that you may find helpful as well. So I'll just put that on the screen so you can see that. But because, yeah, I think it's always nice to have a few questions to go with to start the conversation. And I would say like a really good tip is like, what are things that I usually don't have time to talk about when I'm doing a history usually? And reflect on that for yourself, right? Like, because it's going to be different for everybody. Like I might skip over goals, or I might skip over some of their history, or I might skip over whatever, and jot those things down and say, you know what, I'm going to make a point of actually digging into that a little bit more, and use that as an opportunity to actually grow and develop in your skill of asking questions with patients. I know we're getting close to the time here.
I think unfortunately we're out of time.
I know.
I wish this would go on forever, but almost an hour and here we are.
What did we say, Kathy? We said once you got started, you're going to have a hard time stopping. So.
Well, thank you very much to everyone for attending, but especially to Maxie and Andrew for all of these considerations and reflections about virtual care. I think as we become more familiar with these virtual platforms and we start really looking at this revised model of service, that the concepts are important to keep in mind as we move forward as a profession, not just individually. So thank you very much for your time. I wish all of you a great day.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode where Max and I chat about telehealth and the therapeutic relationship. If you're wanting to connect with other rehab professionals to learn how to tackle telehealth in your practice, I'd encourage you to check out a Facebook group that recently started called 30 Days to Tackle Telehealth for Rehab Professionals. It's a Facebook group, and it's a place where we just want to learn together. Everyone's in the same boat. We're all new to this. And really, it's about learning and connecting and growing and really just becoming more confident and competent delivering our rehab services in a telehealth environment. If you'd like to join this group, it's pretty easy to find. You can always search Facebook, or you can go to this address, and we'll also make sure to include this in the show notes. It's facebook.com/groups/tackle/telehealth. So once again, that's facebook.com/groups/tackle.telehealth. And hope you have a great day and stay tuned for the next episode. Take care. Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode. It's great having you on the show today. Now, if you've been enjoying the new show, I'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes, as this just helps more people find out about the podcast, and we'd love to get your feedback.
And if you want to check out the show notes from the podcast, just go to ignitephysio.ca/podcasts.
And if there's any topics that you want us to cover, just shoot us an email at hello@ignitephysio.ca, and we'll make sure to get back in touch with you and see what we can do there. So anyways, thanks for joining us on the show today. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.